You wrote to my father. You read it then. No, I meant for you to read it. Then I read it, I say, smiling. Thank you. No thanks are necessary. What I wrote about you was truthful. I look at her gnarled hands playing on her calendar blotter. You know about your trouble with the law, she says, rescuing me before I say anything about my father, anything that might require her to do or say something I don't want done or said. I nod. Yes, I know. She reaches into her drawer and pulls out a stack of papers, the poetry assignment. Doing something wrong, even something hurtful, doesn't mean you're a bad person, Nicholas. Not at 16. I know that. Do you? I wasn't certain. Her watery blue eyes meet mine a second, and she smiles. She whisks a sheet from a stack of papers. My poem. It's not graded, but she's written "See Me" across the top. See me being teacherese for call the guys in the white coats. See you? I advised the school's literary journal, The Seagull. I thought the writer might wish to submit some other work. When I saw it was you, I knew you wouldn't. Why is that? Wouldn't suit your image. Didn't know I had one. But I can't help it. I give her a Nick Andreas smile. She looks away. Your image precedes you into the room. You should try leaving it home sometime. The warning bell rings and I hear the hallway sounds. Look, I say, I just wanted to thank you. She nods and I shove the paper into my notebook. I collect my backpack and start to leave. I turn back. Was my poem really any good? She nods again, chewing a bite of cafeteria hoagie before saying, think about what I said. I keep walking, but I'm picturing myself dressed in black, reading poetry in a dimly lit coffee house. My room, later that day. I can't help taking out the poem again. I feel kind of weird about it. It takes me a minute to realize the weird feeling is pride. Maybe I can actually write. What a laugh. It's just a stupid poem, but no one's ever really said I was good at anything before. I reread it. The content strikes me again. I miss Tom, even though he doesn't deserve it. The journal. After drinking with my father, I thought I'd end up at Caitlin's, but when my motor stopped, I was in Tom's driveway. It was 11:30. I'd driven 2 hours to travel 2 blocks. I grabbed the packed gym bag I always kept in my trunk and walked to the patio door. Tom let me in, unquestioning. Still, I told him my father had a woman over. If Tom knew I was lying, he never mentioned it. I followed him down the hall. The great thing about Tom's room was it never changed. It evolved, maybe, over the years, with Power Rangers posters replaced by Jennifer Love Hewitt, then Rebecca Romaine Stamos. But if you looked on his top closet shelf, next to the Baron's SAT prep, there'd still be bags of plastic army men and enough Tonka trucks for a major construction project. He'd deny it, but they were there. Tom sat by the computer, little AOL icons lining the screen's top. He spent most nights instant messaging with Liana. Her parents didn't let her get phone calls from guys. Tom typed Nick here with 2 fingers. Liana's reply appeared. Hi, Nick. I leaned over and typed, hi. Then I flopped onto the bottom bunk of the bunk bed Tom had begged for when we were 8. I buried my face in the old University of Florida bedspread. I loved the smell of the sheets at Tom's house. I knew it was just bleach, but to me it was home. I took out my Spanish workbook and spent the next half hour making pointless marks in it. Tom's 2-fingered typing punctuated the silence. I finished the assignment, then walked to his chair and stood over him. He turned to me. You mind? I looked away, let him have his tender moment. Finally, the computer said, goodbye, and I asked, you at least having cyber sex? Not even getting cyber naked. Cyber making out? Cyber frustrated. Cyber pathetic, I said. I walked into the bathroom. I even kept a toothbrush there. I used it and got into bed. The desk lamp was off, so the only light was the glow from the Dilbert screensaver. Tom hoisted himself to the top bunk. The bed always creaked when he did that. Was my father still in the living room drinking? Could Tom's father ever do that? Impossible. Springs sagged above me, and suddenly I wanted to talk. Wanted to tell Tom everything. Things I'd never told him or anyone. Not only about my father, but about me and Kat. That sometimes I felt so out of control with her. But about my father, too. How afraid I was of becoming like him. Tom shifted in bed. I asked him if he was awake. When he said yes, I said, "Do you and your dad ever fight? I mean, argue about anything?" "Sure. Doesn't everyone?" "Like what?" "Stupid stuff, mostly. Grades, helping around the house. His ongoing thing's my hair, same as Liana's. You know, he offered to buy me a boat if I cut it short." "Sailboat or powerboat?" "Doesn't matter. If I take it, it'll never end. I mean, you think my hair's stupid, but you accept it. You accept me. My parents just want me to be like everyone else." Last week, my mom said, "Nick always looks so neat." He laughed. "This stupid bet's the worst thing. If we win the Winterfest game, we go to the regionals, but I don't care. I'm just worried about not having to cut my hair." I heard quick, light footsteps. The door opened, and something landed on my bed. "Wimpy's here." "Yeah, dumb dog loves you." Tom's head disappeared from view, and I thought he'd gone to sleep until he said, "How about you and your dad?" I stroked Wimpy's bumpy fur. Then I let my hand drop to the side of the bed. I couldn't tell Tom. His problems were normal, the kind on very special episodes of TV sitcoms. Mine were intense foreign films. What could I say? By the way, my father calls me a mistake, and I slapped Caitlin on the way back from Key West. What could Tom do besides think I was subhuman? Maybe he'd even be right. Finally, I said, "You know, he's not around much. Doesn't care what I do. Guess he likes work better." Wimpy warmed my feet. "You're lucky," Tom said. "Maybe so." I lay there listening to Tom's breathing become even with sleep. The stop and start of the central air. The last time I looked, the digital clock said 2:30. I always wondered if things would have turned out different if I talked to Tom that night. April 4. Mario's class. How did you feel then? Somehow, I'm telling Mario and the world about the fight Caitlin and I had on the 7 Mile Bridge. Mario ambles toward me, plants his feet, and says, "What emotion were you feeling then?" "What emotion? Name it. It's yours." "Guess I was pissed off." Mario sighs audibly. "Are you ever anything else?" "Why is he yanking my chain? I don't have to listen." I push the off button. I sit. "Well?" he says. "Thought it was rhetorical." "You thought wrong." Mario places a hairy hand on my shoulder. "What, my volatile boy, did you feel besides pissed off?" I don't feel like answering. "Here are some choices." Mario smiles, patient, a botanist waiting for flowers to grow. "Were you afraid? Embarrassed? Ashamed of being a jerk to the woman you supposedly loved? You said no put-downs." I stand, my shoulder brushing his gut. "Am I embarrassing you?" Still angelic. "No." I look into 10 eyes. Are they laughing? "What's your point?" "You've got 2 speeds, pissed off and asleep. You can't operate like that. You've got to acknowledge other emotions, other ways of dealing with them." He starts to walk away, then turns. "Your girlfriend says something you think questions your manhood, so you call her a bitch or a whore or whatever particular term of endearment you learned at your father's knee. Next time you figure she asked for it, so you hit her. Is that the best thing to do?" "I don't know." "Do you want to know? Think." Outside, a guy and a girl jog by. I watch them slow to a walk, first her, then him. He swings an arm to grab her, and she stops, leans toward him. They kiss, then again, his free hand caressing her hair. "I don't know," I repeat, but the words are hollow. "That's great," Mario says. "No, really, it's great. You're proud of what you did." He leans over me. "Hoo-wee! Nick Andreas is a hero. He can lick any girl he wants." "Screw you." Behind my eyes feel suddenly hot. "I'm pissing you off," Mario says. "Yes." He leans closer, on me like tight briefs. No one else moves. He waves a chubby forefinger in my eyes. "So, you're pissed?" "Yes," swallowing. You're madder than my fat brother Julio when someone beats him to the dinner table. Yes. Across from me, AJ's mouth hangs open.
Then hit me,
Mario whispers. What? Did I stutter? Hit me! When I don't budge, Mario yells in my face, hit me! Instead, I elbow past him, the running girl's image still tattooed on my brain. I can't. Mario follows. Why the hell not? You chicken? Quit it. No, you're mad, aren't you? Right. When you got mad at Caitlin, you hit her. I slapped her. But it's no different, even to me. Hit her, slapped her, you didn't turn the other cheek. Adopt this Gandhi posture you're taking here, did you? When I shake my head, he says, so you're mad at me, you hit me, right? You're a teacher. It's okay to hit your girlfriend, but not a teacher? I didn't say that, I say. You didn't have to. You say it with every molecule of your being. I look away. I know it's not okay. But you can't control yourself? I shake my head, just to get rid of him, and sit down again. The room's so quiet, I swear I hear my hair blowing in the air conditioner. Mario nudges Tiny over and sits by me. Sure you can, he says. You just did it with me. You can do the same with her. I should have hit him when I had the chance. The rest of the class, Mario lectures about the three C's, compromise, communication, and control. Near the end, Kelly says, hey, Mario, what do you call a woman with two black eyes? We're not doing that today, Mario says. Kelly stops, but when Mario turns away, Kelly whispers, the new and improved model. After class, I gather my stuff, hanging back so I'm the last to go. When everyone's gone, I approach Mario. The fluorescent lights buzz overhead. That day on the bridge, when I slapped Caitlin... Yeah? He turns to give me his full attention. I was afraid, okay? I was afraid she'd leave me. Mario nods. I know you were. He starts to reach his hand out, then takes it back when he sees my face. It's okay to be afraid, Nick. I shrug and walk out. Tiny is waiting outside. He offers me a ride home. I'd take him up on it, but today I'm meeting Leo. We're banging out some school-required community service hours by selling sodas at a carnival. Our shift begins at noon. At 5 after, I'm still waiting. I remember when we discussed lateness in class. I'm annoyed with Leo, but not furious. Would I be madder at Kat? Losing it, maybe? No, not really. Maybe. Probably. No time to consider. Leo's black Trans Am cruises to a stop. When I get in, he says, sorry we're late. Someone got held up at the drugstore. He turns to the guilty party, Nasa, sitting beside him. That's your story, right? Leo, she says. Leo, he imitates, gunning the motor. Why are you acting this way in front of... What way? Leo demands over the tire's squeal. You're the problem, not me. I'm sorry, Nasa examines the floor mat. I'm sorry, Leo mocks. I'm sorry I'm always late. I'm sorry I'm a lying slut. I'm sorry I... It's okay, I tell Nasa. I don't think it matters if we're late. Leo, I ignore. Why is he acting like this? Why is it so familiar? The Grove traffic is heavy, and Leo swerves, barely avoiding cars to the front and side, eyeing Nasa, not the road. I don't appreciate being lied to, he says, or waiting, with your parents giving me the evil eye while you're out catting around. Leo floors it through a yellow light, and Nasa clutches the door handle. Am I scaring you, princess? Quit it, I tell him. He glances back like he forgot I was there. Quit what? I look at Nasa. Her eyes plead with me to say nothing. Quit driving like a maniac, I say. Leo slows, saying nothing. We reach the fairgrounds 20 minutes late. The sun scorches, melting wads of cotton candy and blobs of ice cream dropped on the ground. The air is filled with the odor of hot dogs and burnt sugar, a smell that, like everything else, reminds me of Caitlin. We were at Winterfest Carnival the day she left me for good. Leo, Nasa, and I find our booth in silence, a trailer manned by 2 girls from Palmetto High. Nasa and I get to work. Leo does nothing, just palms the counter watching Nasa. When the customer is male, she steps back, letting me or one of the Palmetto girls help him. I want to ask why. Why is Leo acting like a poster boy for female chastity? But Nasa's eyes stop me. She's afraid of him. No wonder. If he acts like this around people, what's he like when they're alone? The afternoon is slow, and I'm slower. Around 2:30, three guys ask for Nasa. She goes to help them, then stops, steps back. Leo shoves past. "Just get the ice," he says. "Hello to you too, Leo," the biggest guy, a rich kid trying to look like a gangster, says as Nasa obeys Leo's command. If looks could kill, the guy would be 200 pounds of medical waste. "Hello, Alejandro," Leo says. "Visiting my girlfriend?" "Could be," Alejandro smiles. "Don't sell yourself short. Maybe I'm visiting you." "That's a given. You visit Nasa, you visit me." Leo brushes melted ice from the counter and yells to Nasa, "You got that ice yet?" "Yes," Nasa hands Leo three cups, not looking up. "Yes, sir," Alejandro corrects. "Give my man Leo the respect he deserves." Nasa's lip twitches. "Por favor, Alex," she whispers. "Please don't start with him." Behind us, the roller coaster's in gear. Boys laugh, girls scream, but I don't listen. A family passes, the daughter hanging from her father's shoulders. Twin boys, in matching Scooby-Doo t-shirts, sprint for the shooting gallery. I don't watch. I hear Leo's voice. I see Leo's eyes. I don't like what I see. "Why don't we go?" I say, and the Palmetto girls volunteer to cover for us. "Because Nasa isn't through serving her friends," Leo pulls Nasa to the counter. Ice flies everywhere. "Now clean it up!" He raises his hand and she backs away. "Leoncito, not here." Nasa's eyes are huge in her face. Leo releases her, suddenly calm. "Nasa, your manners. Ask Alex what else he wants." Nasa doesn't move.
"Do it!"
Nasa shakes her head at Alejandro. "What else would you like?" "To give you a ride home," Alejandro says, and Leo's shoulders constrict. "I have a ride home," Nasa indicates Leo. I go to help a family. Through their chatter, I hear Alejandro say, "You stay long enough, he'll kill you." But Nasa pats Leo's hand. "We understand each other." Alejandro shrugs and signals to his friends. They walk away toward the rides, whirling and sick-inducing. Across the midway, a monster in a cape scares passers-by, inviting them into his haunted mansion. Three little girls in cornrows hug one another in fright. But I see Leo's black eyes. Later, when Leo drops me off, I watch his taillights to the end of the block, then beyond until they're like distant stars. I don't plan to see him again. 10 minutes later, in my room. God, was I like that with Caitlin? The journal. Saint was shirtless, and I was sick about it. A few days before Winterfest, the school's annual football game and carnival, we had lunch at the beach. Saint was still trying to lose Tom's suntan tattoo. He'd offered a reward for the culprit's name, but I never told. Maybe if he'd noticed the dolphin, still branded on Tom's leg, he'd have figured it out. I was eating Kentucky Fried Chicken strips, trying not to look at Saint, who was letting Peyton spread suntan lotion on his back. Caitlin and I hadn't argued in close to 2 weeks. Her amethyst ring glittered in the sun as she ate her usual raw carrots. "Does it ever occur to you that no one wants to see your armpit hair when they're eating?" I asked Saint finally, my arm around Caitlin. "Nope, it never does," Saint said, having spread suntan lotion on every part of his back except Tom's lettering. He lay on his stomach and let Peyton feed him chicken. Between bites, he spoke to Caitlin. "Heard you at rehearsal yesterday. You got some voice."
"Rehearsal?" I asked.
"For the talent show."
He turned to the rest of the group, saying, "Bunch of guys are doing an act, and Caitlin's got a solo."
"You do?" Liana and I both said at once. Liana started babbling about how wonderful that was. I said nothing, just looked at Kat. She sat only an inch away, but her eyes were elsewhere. Why had she defied me? She knew how I felt, yet she'd gone to an audition and rehearsals without telling me. Didn't I matter to her? I stared until my eyes felt ready to burst. Finally, someone changed the subject, and Caitlin looked at me. She flinched. I mouthed one word. "No." Caitlin looked away, whining something about hoping I'd change my mind. I ignored her. I dropped my hand from her shoulder and turned to Ashley, who was talking to Peyton. I said, "Say, Ash, I just found out Caitlin's in a talent show Saturday night. Want to go?" Ashley stopped talking and flipped her auburn hair. "Of course I'm going. Everyone is." "I meant with me," I said. "Seems the seat next to mine's open. Seat in my car, too." I leaned close, ignoring Caitlin. If she didn't care what I thought, I'd teach her a lesson.
"You messing with me?" Ashley asked, so I knew she still liked me.
"No way," I said. "We'll have dinner after. Rusty Pelican's nice." I cast a sidelong glance at Cat. The Rusty Pelican was our place, where we'd gone for each month's anniversary. The third one was that week. I could see Caitlin's lips pressed together, her eyes ready to spill. Ashley said,
"Sure, I'll go."
"Why are you doing this, Nick?" Caitlin asked.
"Doing what? You're the one doing it to me."
Everyone pretended to continue their own conversations, but they watched us. I said to Caitlin, "I don't want you embarrassed."